Last Friday was the debut of New York Times op-ed writer Bret Stephens, who'd been hired away from the Wall Street Journal to offer a conservative perspective in the overwhelmingly liberal Times opinion columns. This was part of the post-election hand-wringing throughout the media that we institutionally were as trapped in our filter bubbles as Trump loyalists were in theirs. The idea, as editorial page editor James Bennett phrased it, was to, quote, broaden the range of Times debate about consequential questions. Liberal readers of the Times had expressed concern at Stephens' hiring, and Stephens, in his debut column, obliged their worst fears. His article, titled Climate of Complete Certainty, lambasted liberals who rage at deniers, but themselves deny skeptics the right to their skepticism. To quote his piece, claiming total certainty about the science traduces the spirit of science and creates openings for doubt whenever a climate claim proves wrong. Demanding abrupt and expensive changes in public policy raises fair questions about ideological intentions. Brian Beutler is a senior editor at The New Republic and host of the political podcast Primary Concerns. While many readers were upset about the Times' seeming revisionism or false balance on climate change, Beutler was more upset about the Times publishing a flimsy argument. Brian, welcome back to OTM.
Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, describe the column, what you believe he was trying to pull off.
I think Stephen's aim in that column was to present the debate over climate change as one dominated by environmental activists who don't grapple with the possibility that the consequences of climate change will be less severe than they think, and so their prescriptions for how to deal with climate change today might end up being too costly and too disruptive to be worth it.
Essentially, Stephens is dispensing political advice to the climate activist community, saying, you know, don't be so strident, don't be so categorical, don't express such certainty, because it harms you politically. Again, you don't really think that the issue here was his take on the science.
One can argue fairly, I think, that there is some uncertainty as to how severe the consequences of climate change will be, and that despite their awareness that the worst possible consequences of climate change could be catastrophic, they nevertheless think it is unwise to devote many resources, hike taxes, impose regulations to insure against what may be only a 10% chance of civilizational disaster. Now, I wouldn't agree with that argument, but at least it would be reflective of the range of possible outcomes that climate scientists have laid out for us and that they're willing to take that risk. What Stephens did instead was to make it seem as if the people demanding the most robust action have some hidden ideological reasons for wanting those policy prescriptions in the first place, when in reality, the situation is pretty much the opposite.
This first essay, I think I understand you saying, paints him in an ideological corner in a way that seems familiar to you.
That's right. I don't think that this is unique to conservative opinion writers, but I think it is a tendency more commonly seen among conservative opinion writers. Because in the universe of liberal opinion writers, the government is generally seen as an instrument that can at times be used to serve the common good. When liberal opinion writers advocate for a government response, it is usually to something situational, whether it be an asteroid that's about to impact the Earth, or climate change, or a large population of people without insurance. On the right, conservatives have a foundational ideological view, which is that government intervention is wrong or to be best avoided. That impels them when confronted with these urgent public matters that we face routinely. They look for more genial reasons to say that government intervention is wrong.
Clean Water Act is going to cost jobs. Clean Air Act is going to cost jobs. Dodd-Frank is going to cost jobs. Obamacare is going to cost jobs.
That's right. You see a tendency to assume the rightness of the ideological premise that government intervention is bad and build an argument from there that justifies it. You see this manifest in the politics around healthcare, where rather than just say that it's the conservative view that the federal government shouldn't help people purchase health insurance, they argue that with a real market-based solution, we could cover more people at lower cost. And occasionally, either a member of Congress or a conservative pundit will come out and say what the conservative view on this really is, but it is much less politically palatable to make those arguments
than the lie that is used to sell the policy.
The ones that assume in advance or that beg the question that small government ideology is a panacea to all of these problems.
I think to understand what you've just told me, we have to articulate what you believe is the best argument that conservatives can make and what argument that most often they do make.
If Bret Stephens were telling those people, I understand that you think that the risk to the planet is potentially existential and that that's why you are advocating such a robust response, I just disagree, and I think we should accept a greater amount of risk in the future in order to save money and have less government intervention now. I don't think a lot of environmentalists would agree with him, but I also don't think that they would feel like he had flipped the dynamic between environmental activists, climate change activists, and people who do not support government response to climate change on its head.
So let's get to the nub of this, Brian. The New York Times, to its great credit, wanted to expand the diversity of voices in their op-ed page, and more power to them. But this was his first column, and it kind of, you know, blew up in his face. And if he is at pains now to deal with other aspects of conservative orthodoxy, and if he's playing as weak a hand as he was playing here, you know, isn't it inevitable that this is going to happen week after week after week, that he's going to become the Howard Cosell of the New York Times op-ed page, the broadcaster who was so opinionated and abrasive that people tuned in just to be angry at him?
I don't think so, and I would hope not. But I think that the way around the problem isn't to focus necessarily on Bret Stephens or conservative opinion writers, but to turn the question on newspapers in general or publications in general and say what you put on your pages is ultimately up to you. It's your platform. And if you want ideological diversity, you should seek it. But that doesn't mean that you should necessarily allow anyone who you hire carte blanche to write whatever they want in your pages. And if you find one of your writers, be they a liberal or a conservative, making a fallacious argument or a factually challenged argument or an insincere argument, it is within your power to say, hey, we need to edit this. We need to work on this piece because it has some flaws. And because conservative ideas all sort of stem from one foundational idea about government, the work of persuading can, I think, become a little repetitive and a little boring, and as things become more complicated in the world, a little bit unpersuasive. But this is what you sign up to do, whether you're a conservative opinion writer or a liberal opinion writer, is to try to persuade readers that your view of the world is right and the arguments for your position are hard to refute. And if you can't do that basic work, you either quit or you fudge it, basically.
Did Bret Stephens fudge it?
Whether he intended to fudge it or not, he fudged it.
Whatever he intended, it's fudge.
That's right.
Brian, thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Brian Beutler is senior editor at The New Republic and host of the political podcast Primary Concerns. This has been an OTM Podcast Extra. Stay tuned to this week's full-length show to hear more about how some in the conservative community are grappling with and, yes, even changing their minds about the reality of climate change. And while I have you here, here's a reminder that you can sign up for the On the Media newsletter at our website, onthemedia.org. It comes out every Thursday morning with previews of what we're working on, insights into other media our producers are consuming, and lots of weirdness. Pretty much like, if not our show, our offices.